Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. On the program this week is Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Politico, a guy who knows just about what there is to know about state politics. Welcome back, Jimmy.
Happy to be here, Alan.
So, at the top of the news this week is a fellow by the name of Todd Kominsky. Tell us about him.
Todd Kominsky is an assemblyman. He's a first-term assemblyman, actually, from the North Shore of Long Island. He's kind of an interesting guy, soft-spoken, and he won his election in 2014 when a guy named Harvey Weisenberg decided to retire. It was not particularly hard for him to win that election. It's a solidly Democratic seat, but he's in the news this week because he's being talked about as a potential challenger to the Republicans to succeed Dean Skelos. Skelos, you may recall, and your listeners might recall, was the Republican leader of the Senate who lost his seat in December after he was convicted of federal corruption charges. So, you know, this is a race where it could have implications for the balance of power in the state Senate, which is going to have big implications for the direction of our state government. So the Republicans control the state Senate, and it's their last kind of fisthold on the state government. Democrats need to pick up, depending on some of the mathematical complications, about anywhere from like three to five seats to wrest the chamber back from the Republicans.
And so does that include the traitors?
That's why I said there were mathematical complications.
Explain the traitors to everybody.
Well,
it's not a word you would use. It's a word I use.
Yeah. So, you know, the Senate right now is controlled by the Republicans effectively, but they have an alliance with something called the Independent Democratic Conference. And so that's five senators led by Jeff Klein of the Bronx. They're all enrolled Democrats, but they're separate from sort of the mainstream Democratic Conference. So right now, there are 31 elected Republicans in the Senate. There's a guy from Brooklyn named Simca Felder. He's number 32, and that 32-vote block gives the Republicans control. And then they have this kind of alliance with this five-member IDC. So depending on how you look at it, there are either 32 or 37 members of that majority. And as a result, there are 25 so-called mainstream or regular Democrats. And so the question, the reason I said there were mathematical complications, is how many seats do the mainstream Democrats need to gain in the chamber before they either somehow strike a deal with the IDC that gives them control, or do they need to completely, you know, gain enough that they wipe out the IDC, or they wipe out the importance of the IDC? Or do they fight the IDC? Do they try and launch primary challengers against IDC senators? And so these are the big questions of politically of 2016. But Todd Kominsky, in the interim, was this week named as the Democrats' choice for the Skelos seat. He's a former federal prosecutor. He is, I think, either the nephew or the great-nephew of American icon Mel Brooks. And so
doesn't get better than
it
that.
It doesn't get better. And so I think that the Democrats have a strong candidate with a good narrative, saying, I was a corruption prosecutor. The Republican before me got ousted because of corruption. So that's going to be a race to watch. And we expect that it's going to happen in April as a special election. And it should really set the tone and kind of show where things are heading going into November when the real play is on stage.
You didn't mention one name in this business about whether the Republicans come to the forefront or the Democrats take it all. And that's the guy who says he's a Democrat, but a lot of people think is secretly for the Republicans maintaining control of the chamber. And I'll bet you know who I'm talking about.
I think you're referring to Andrew Cuomo.
I am.
Yeah. So Andrew Cuomo, the governor, as you said, is a Democrat, but he sort of gently encouraged this Republican control of the Senate. He gently encouraged the IDC to secede from its other Democratic colleagues in 2011. And he sort of, again, I think, certainly tacitly stood by as the IDC allied with the Republicans. And in 2012, gave the Republicans a majority control of the chamber, even though there were more elected Democrats than Republicans in the Senate. So I think that's why some people, including yourself, Alan, talk about Jeff Klein and the IDC as traitors. There are certainly lots of Democrats who see them that way. So, you know,
If Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, says to IDC, if there's a close election, if they win and the Democrat wins, and Cuomo says, I'm going to run for office myself, people are accusing me of being a closet Republican, what if I insist that the so-called, either in your terms, the IDC, or in my terms, the traitors, come back into the Democratic fold and give them the majority? Would they have to do it?
It would put a lot of pressure on them, sure. You know, the governor is the head of the Democratic Party. He is the most robust Democratic fundraiser. And, you know, he carries a lot of weight by virtue of his office and just by virtue of the bully pulpit that he carries. So, again, I think...
Emphasis on the word bully?
Well, no, I think the bully pulpit, you know. But I think that the thing about Cuomo is that he has not made that kind of demand, either privately or publicly, that you're talking about. And his lack of action has been perceived by many, including myself, to be in at least tacit support of Republicans controlling the state Senate. Now, why would he want that? Why would he want that? Why would a Democrat, the son of Mario Cuomo, the liberal icon at one point in our politics, why would he want Republicans to stay in control of the state Senate?
I take it that's a rhetorical question. You don't really want me to answer, because I will.
Well, I have my own answer, but
okay, go ahead.
So the reason is that, you know, Governor Cuomo has enjoyed being a centrist and sort of playing Solomon in the middle between the Democrat-dominated state assembly and this Republican-controlled state Senate. Cuomo doesn't want to be dragged too far to the left, and he feels that if both houses of the state legislature are under the control of Democrats, then it will screw him up. There will be people calling for Democratic things like tax increases or, you know, legislative bans on hydrofracking that he doesn't really want to deal with or have sort of on his plate. At the other token, Cuomo saw in 2009 and 2010 when Democrats had control of the state Senate, and they did it for the first time in, I think, 40 years. And frankly, it didn't go so well. There were a few other factors that were against them. The economy was very bad, but was largely regarded, and I was a reporter at the time, it was dysfunctional.
You had a bunch of crooks included in the Democratic ranks at the time, right?
Right. The leaders of the Democratic Conference at that time were not really ethical people. They didn't really have a firm grasp of what it meant to go from the minority, where you sort of play a role and you're a critic and you kind of make proposals that you know are never going to go where, versus the majority, where you have to govern, where you have to make deals and move forward. So they had difficulty corralling their conference. They did have, I think, just doing a quick count in my head, at least four members, senior members of the conference, who have now been convicted of either state or federal charges, including the leader, Malcolm Smith, and then his successor as leader, John Sampson. And so I think that's seared into Cuomo's consciousness, that he feels that, you know, say what you will about the Republicans, at least you can make a deal with them and they deliver. And in 2009 and 2010, that was not the case for the Senate Democratic Conference.
You know, Jimmy Vielkind, we had a very interesting look into some of the internecine politics, because we were allowed to hear some tapes that the federal prosecutors did between Dean Skelos, now convicted, and his son, now convicted of bad things. You would have thought, based on the fact that we all think that Governor Cuomo, for want of a better word, was playing footsie with the Republicans in the Senate, that, you know, they would be somewhat appreciative. But boy, did Skelos and his son say bad things about the governor in those conversations.
They said bad things about the governor. They said bad things about Jeff Klein. They just said bad things about other people and life in general. So, you know, that to me was interesting, and it was certainly eye-popping.
It was for me.
But it wasn't that revelatory, because the sentiments that were expressed were nothing new. You know, these were things that we kind of assumed that Dean Skelos was thinking, but of course he never said publicly. It turns out that he certainly said them privately.
You know, I have to ask this question of you. I mean, I think that the governor has his own style, and he's very forceful. Some people think he's a bully. He's now picking yet another fight with Mayor de Blasio in New York over the treatment of the homeless. I ask this to almost every guest we have on this program, which is, why is he doing that? Why does he keep picking on de Blasio? De Blasio seems like a weak sister, and he keeps beating him up, and his reputation as a bully grows larger.
Well, I think Andrew Cuomo is a political figure who cares about power, and I think he cares about maximizing his own power. And I think his view of the world, and certainly his view of state politics, is that if there is someone else who is powerful, who, by virtue of an elective office or by virtue of some other structural arrangement, has the potential to hurt you or the potential to be your enemy, you should attack. You should put them down. You should knock down all other centers of power, whether they are real or whether they are just potential. You know, so with Mayor de Blasio, that was sort of an obvious play, right? De Blasio came into the left of the political spectrum of Cuomo. De Blasio, by virtue of being the mayor of the city of New York, had a bully pulpit that perhaps rivaled the governor's in its strength. And as a result, I think that Cuomo wanted to make sure that he was perceived both in New York and from outsiders looking into New York as the alpha Democrat in this state. And for a while, de Blasio, running on a platform of addressing income inequality, running on a platform of supporting a minimum wage increase and supporting higher taxes on the wealthy to pay for social programs, sort of made clear that Cuomo was a centrist and really, I think, made a lot of people question where within the Democratic Party nationally Andrew Cuomo stood. So I think to the extent that de Blasio does not succeed as mayor, it helps Andrew Cuomo. It gives Andrew Cuomo that cover. And we've certainly seen, as you mentioned, with the homeless, but with numerous other instances over the past several years, Cuomo is undermining de Blasio either subtly or not. And I think that those are the reasons why.
But I loved what you said in the beginning. Anybody else is suspect. Basically, to Cuomo as the power center. But he doesn't play well with others. And as a result of that, he picked on a whole bunch of people he's had to sort of go backwards on. In the beginning, he was picking on Schneiderman, the attorney general who moved into the office after him. He certainly picked on Tom DiNapoli, the very popular controller of the state of New York, who all the insiders love to death. And he had to back off on that, too. So this is really a character trait on the governor's part, more than a philosophical one, I think.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I just read the wonderful Schneerson book. I actually read it a while ago, called The Contender, about Andrew Cuomo. And from the very beginning, this is the way this guy's come out of the womb. He doesn't do himself any favors. Now, one of the things that a lot of people are worrying about or wondering about is whether he's going to be indicted in the same way the other two people in the three people in the room have been indicted and convicted, Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos. My own sensitivities to this, Jimmy, and then I'll shut up. But my own sensitivities to this are, if Preet Bharara, the crusading U.S. attorney, were going to do it, he probably would have done it already.
I don't know that's really the case. I don't read a lot into the timing. And I don't know the answer to that question. The only person who knows the answer to that question is Preet Bharara. And even he doesn't know it because he has to convince, if he were to try and bring charges against the governor or anyone else, he couldn't do it. He would have to convince a grand jury to do so. So with all that,
caveat. Well, he could do that, as Saul Wachtel once instructed us. You know, a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich.
Right, if they want to. But with that caveat, you know, it's a very difficult question that of course I and other political reporters and political observers are grappling with this year, last year, and even as far back as 2014. On the one hand, if you look at Andrew Cuomo and everything we know about Andrew Cuomo, all the perceived flaws and all of the things at which we have discerned Preet Bharara is looking. And there are two things, really. There's one, how contractors were selected for a program that the governor has pushed in Western New York called the Buffalo Billion, which is building, among other things, a solar panel factory for Solar City. And the other thing was how Cuomo and his aides interacted with the Moreland Commission to investigate public corruption and the circumstances under which Cuomo cut a deal with then legislative leaders Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos to shut down the Moreland Commission, to essentially disband it while its investigation was ongoing. So those are the real rubs. Now, you know, if we look at public corruption arrests and convictions in New York of late, there's a common theme is that someone is lining their own pockets, right? Sheldon Silver was accused of, and a jury confirmed, that he took $4 million over the years in legal fees that were essentially kickbacks and bribes. Senator Skelos was found to have traded official favors in order to get money and jobs for his son, Adam. So there was an element of personal gain there, lining his own pockets. With Andrew Cuomo, no one has suggested or really painted a nexus that I'm aware of him lining his own pockets. The only thing that comes close is the book deal that he cut, where Andrew Cuomo's biography, which did not sell very well, he was paid upfront, I think, close to $750,000 by News Corp. And of course, News Corp, which owns the Wall Street Journal, it owns Fox News, it owns the New York Post. This is a company that has interest before the state. And in fact, I think just a few weeks ago, it effectively received subsidies from the state to move its offices. So that's the closest you can come to saying that Andrew Cuomo's lining his own pockets. But what Cuomo does is maximize his own power. Every move that Cuomo does is to his political advantage, either through raising campaign contributions or just through kind of increasing his political muscle power. And so it would be a new legal theory or new legal ground.
That's correct.
If Bharara were to somehow construct a narrative and get an indictment based on that, you know, because there's correlation up and down between Governor Shartok, you know, announcing a project in, you know, Timbuktu, and then the Timbuktu Development Corporation, which is going to get the contract, sending money to your campaign account, right?
Sure.
That happens all the time. And with Cuomo, it happens all the time. But unless someone's got a videotape or an audio recording or someone's stupid enough to put a letter or a memo in writing saying, hey, Governor Shartok, you know, if you approve the development, we Timbuktu will give you the money, you don't get indicted for that. And we're going to assume
But Jimmy, it is a whole new substantive area. We know that campaign finance is something that really is part of the Albany corruption picture. And we know that Preet Bharara is intent on cleaning up Albany, so maybe he takes a chance.
Well, that's the thing. The one effect of the Silver and Skelos convictions is that there has been a perception within the Capitol and among rank-and-file legislators that the line of what had previously been thought was legal behavior, maybe unseemly, maybe arguably unethical and even immoral behavior, but legal behavior has moved. So with Joe Bruno's case, we saw that Senator Bruno had a $20,000 per month consulting arrangement with a guy, Jared Abbruzzese. Abbruzzese then got favors from the state, things that benefited his business interests that Bruno directed. And it turns out that the work Bruno did for that $20,000 a month was not really that tangible. It was intangible.
To say nothing of the horse.
Right. And so,
just remind everybody that
there
was a horse transaction, a nag sold for a lot of money.
Right.
And Abbruzzese said himself.
And I believe the name of the horse was Exonerate.
Exonerated. You know,
just
perfect.
One of the wonderful things about Albany here is that we don't need to write the irony. It writes itself. But jurors found that because there was no explicit quid pro quo, because Abbruzzese and Bruno never said, hey, if you do this, I'll do this. And in fact, because Abbruzzese on the witness stand testified, no, there was no arrangement. There was no bribe. There was no expectation. We never talked about it. Joe Bruno was exonerated. Now, Sheldon Silver thought that under those same circumstances, he too would have been exonerated. That because he never explicitly articulated that the people who sent him legal referrals and who sent him kickbacks were doing so in exchange for some official actions, that he would be found not guilty. Jurors disagreed. He was wrong. So, you know, we'll have to see. Silver has said he will appeal. Skelos and his son, Adam, have said that they will appeal their convictions. But it seems that the line has shifted a little bit, and we shall see if Bharara tries to shift it further.
I want to ask you a question. We only have 5 minutes left, but of course there has been a leadership change. When Silver leaves, do they go to a wild-eyed, bushy-haired reformer? No, they go to Carl Hastie of the Bronx, sometimes referred to people like me as Boss Hastie because he was the head of the political organization in the Bronx. So now, instead of going to get a reformer, they get a guy who really came out of that power structure. How's he doing?
Well, the real tests of how he's doing are going to be this legislative session. You know, he came to power abruptly, and he did well in that he survived his first several weeks and months in office. He negotiated a budget, and he negotiated his way through an end of session. And then, I think quite adroitly, he spent the summer and the fall traveling around the state, meeting with his members, learning about issues and projects that are in their districts, so that he now comes to Albany ready to, with that knowledge base and ready to sort of move forward on a more statewide basis. There have been some troubling signs. There was supposed to be a group of assembly people that was to recommend reforms for how the chamber operates. That group missed its first deadline of December. There's still no idea. There's still no report. So what some had hoped would be an earthquake that would shake up some of just the way the assembly had done business. That is to say, where the speaker has immense influence over how resources are distributed among members, what legislation comes to the floor, what resources are distributed to the Republican minority. We haven't seen any major changes there. In fact, we've seen Hasty explicitly articulate a policy that had sort of always existed under Silver, which is that he doesn't want to bring any bill to the floor, even if it has the votes to pass in the chamber with Republican votes. He does not want to bring any bill to the floor that does not have 76 Democrats willing to vote yes. And that's come up with a few things. One of them is mixed martial arts, which is sort of the clearest one. And
that's a push to have an even more aggravated and dangerous thing than just boxing.
It's the ultimate fighting championship. Yeah. It's a popular sport. I don't watch it, but a lot of people do. And New York is, I think, the last state in the union where it is banned.
Good idea.
So, but the policy of the speaker not moving legislation unless the majority of his conference is there, you could argue, is antithetical to small d democracy. So I think we have to see how he does this year. We have to see what he unveils. And, you know, we're recording this on a Wednesday, and the legislature opens today. We should hear more about his priorities.
Indeed. Okay, so that's in the Assembly. In the Senate, you have a next-door neighbor to Dean Skelos, Mr. Flanagan, becoming the leader there. You hear less about him.
Well, I don't think you hear less about Flanagan. Flanagan has been in Albany, and he has been a legislator, I think, for about 30 years.
Is that right? I remember his father.
His father.
That's how old I am.
His father died very abruptly.
Yeah.
I think it was a heart attack. And
yes.
John Flanagan, who I think was still in law school at the time, ended up taking the seat from his father. He was in the Assembly. Then he was able to run for a seat in the state Senate. And he's been here for quite some time. And he has been known, at least in political circles, as a guy with some substantive policy experience, in that he was the chair of the Senate's Education Committee. And through all the debates about the Common Core, through all the debates about teacher evaluation, he was one of the leading voices in the chamber. So I think one of the reasons you hear less about him is that he was somewhat more of a known quantity. The other reason I think you hear a little less about him is that his taking the reins of the Republican conference was less of a big deal, because I think that the downfall of Dean Skelos was not as indicative of a changing face of the Republican conference as was the downfall of Silver. Let me explain what I mean. So Silver ruled for 20 years, and over those 20 years, his flock changed. Newer members came in, people who were not old loyalists came in. And so when it was time for him to go, there was time for really an opportunity to hit the reset button with Hasty. With Flanagan, the flock has not really changed. You've still got basically the same group of people. There's some turnover every year, but they're same culturally. There's very strong cultural ethic in that Republican conference that I think has kind of been seamless between Skelos and Flanagan.
They've been there for a long time, or as I've said many times, the legislature may not have term limits, but God does.
Exactly.
And they'll be there for a long time. Well, listen, Jimmy Vielkind, congratulations on everything you're doing with Politico. I have it as an app on my phone, and I'm delighted to read you every day that you're there. We're out of time. Our guest has been Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Politico. Jimmy, again, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Alan. It's always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.